This is MSCI Perspectives, your source for insights for global investors and access to research and expertise from across the investment industry. I'm your host, Adam Bass, and today is September 12th, 2025. Today, we're talking about a shift that's changing how institutional investors think about building portfolios. It's something called the Total Portfolio Approach, or TPA. We've talked about this on the program before, but never in depth. What it is exactly is that instead of allocating capital in neat slices of a pie chart, equities here, bonds there, alternatives over in another bucket, TPA challenges us to think holistically. Every investment must earn its place in the portfolio, not just within its asset class, but in terms of the fund's total objectives. Now, to explore what that means in practice, we'll hear today from two voices.
My name is Ian Patrick, and I am the Chief Investment Officer of Australian Retirement Trust, one of the large superannuation funds in Australia.
I'm Oleg Rubin. I look after MSCI's research in Asia-Pacific across index, analytics, climate, and all the other product lines.
Together, they'll share perspectives on what TPA in the APAC region looks like today, the cultural and governance challenges it raises, and how climate and AI are helping to shape its future. I began by asking Ian if he could share a little bit about his own journey, how he came into superannuation or pensions for those of us in the States, and ultimately became the CIO of the Australian Retirement Trust.
I didn't come to superannuation as the first part of my career. I was trained and started my professional career in South Africa and started in life insurance, in fact. And it was only somewhat later that I transitioned to pensions more generally. And it was that introduction to pensions in South Africa that put me on a road once I migrated to Australia to find myself in superannuation. Specifically, the investment part of superannuation. Back in the 90s in South Africa, there was a very traditional investment model of investment consultants selecting balanced funds or multi-asset funds. I had line responsibility for that investment consulting business. And as they say in the classics, one thing led to another. And as the investment model evolved, so too my relationship with it in superannuation. And I joined ART 10 years ago, which was my first CIO role.
And while Ian's story grounds us inside a single fund, Oleg was able to help us look across the region and what he's been hearing more broadly across Asia-Pacific about the adoption of TPA.
I think one of the things in the region is that we've had a number of early adopters. We're seeing growing interest in what a total portfolio approach can bring. And that's especially true across, you know, sovereign wealth funds, large pension plans, but more recently, insurance companies as well. And I guess the reason for that is that these large institutional investors, they have to grapple with increased complexity in their portfolios. Partially, this is due to private market growth. Also, this is due to diversification needs and where to find them, and as well as like, trying to incorporate more climate objectives in their portfolios. So I think adoption is on the spectrum. We have some organizations who are sort of still inquiring about the approach and still exploring the approach. Others have been very vocal proponents of total portfolio thinking and what it can bring to their decision-making processes.
Oleg recently led a panel on TPA at MSCI's Institutional Investor Forum in Tokyo. I asked him what he heard there in terms of some of the factors that may be holding some institutional investors back from adopting this approach.
We talked a lot in Tokyo and in other client discussions also about the challenges in implementing TPA. And there are a few. And those barriers can be different depending on the types of organizations and the types of markets. So, for example, in Australia, it's sometimes not very easy for superannuation funds to move towards TPA thinking just because of regulation, which constrains them still to build a portfolio that's kind of rigidly adheres to asset class building blocks. Other challenges can include things like legacy governance models where decision-making is still siloed. Challenges can include, for example, hiring the right talent. So really finding people with that ability to think across different asset classes can be a challenge in some markets. And tools can also be a challenge as well. So many systems, whether they're risk systems, whether they're asset allocation systems, aren't really built for total portfolio analytics. And that's especially true when you try to integrate private asset classes into the thinking. So I think, the aspiration in terms of many organizations is there, but a lot are still trying to build the infrastructure. And this can be both technical infrastructure as well as human infrastructure to fully enable the total portfolio approach.
Picking up on Oleg's point about the unique challenges that Australian super funds face in moving toward TPA, Ian often describes investment approaches as existing along a spectrum. In this case, from traditional strategic asset allocation at one end, all the way to a fully dynamic model at the other. I asked him where his organization, also known as ART, sits on that spectrum today.
When I talk about the investment approaches existing on a spectrum, it's not my own personal characterization. There are numerous people who talk about, let's call it a continuum between a very traditional SAA approach, whereby there's an asset liability study or some other benchmark-centric determination of an investment strategy based on asset classes, and that's very periodic. That's the one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is a far more dynamic, integrated approach focused on real-time response to the environment and where the best of the collective thinking of all the investment capabilities are brought to bear, as opposed to being almost strictly an asset class-based approach. Now, there are many ways to characterize the spectrum. There are some who talk about it in buckets, differences in governance, differences in approaches to sustainability, differences in approach to how risk is measured, et cetera, et cetera. But that's basically the scaffolding, let's call it, of differentiating various approaches. You pointed to a question on where would ART sit. If it's a 5-point scale, we probably sit somewhere in the middle around 3. In other words, we would not characterize our approach as set and forget SAA. We would not equally characterize our approach as totally dynamic, but we do aim to harness a collective view of the portfolio and respond dynamically to evolving market conditions within the various constraints that we do have, and hence about a 3.
Oleg frames it slightly differently. For him, TPA is best understood by its negative space. In other words, defining it by what it is not.
Now, what we know is that this whole assumption that asset classes are not very highly correlated with each other, it's often not true. So, for instance, we know that there's a lot of commonality between public equities and private equities, even though they exist in different asset class silos. So from that perspective, anything that breaks down this rigid structure where you first allocate capital to each asset class and then rely on the team within the asset class to build the best portfolio and to combine those kind of separately built portfolios into a whole, anything that breaks down that and accounts more for the correlations or the cross linkages between different asset classes is a step towards a total portfolio thinking. And so essentially what TPA does is it removes those sort of rigid rigid silos and asks the question, what is the overall portfolio trying to achieve? And then at the level of each individual investment, it asks, how does this investment improve the portfolio overall? For example, in terms of its contribution to return, in terms of its contribution to risk, in terms of its contribution to resilience or liquidity. So it's basically, it's kind of a shift from managing mandates within an asset class to managing outcomes and those outcomes at the whole portfolio level.
It's no stretch to say that today, investors everywhere are wrestling with uncertainty, whether that's political, economic, market-driven, or all of the above, really. So for Art, whose commitments stretch decades into the future, the question becomes, how do you reconcile that long horizon with the need to respond in the here and now?
One of the comparative advantages that we do have as an investor is we have effectively semi-permanent capital in that in the Australian superannuation system, plan participants are required to maintain their savings in the plan or in the fund until they reach retirement age. And that's a real advantage because we can take a long-term view on investing, particularly in illiquid assets. But having said that, the statement that we use quite often is that price changes far more rapidly than value. And that's a function of public markets in particular. And so price does tend to move away from our view of long-term value. And we want to be able to exploit that. That's the dynamic asset allocation approach that we employ. That's one element of adapting to market conditions, that movement of price away from value. The other adaption is that in a classical sense, policy changes in response to politics and economics respond to that policy change. And to a degree, that needs to be factored into investment strategy because the evolving nature of that transition from politics to policy to economics shows up in the returns that we're offered by the market and that we can exploit on our members' behalf. And so thinking about the evolution of that world of investment and responding to that in terms of portfolio allocations is crucial. So our advantage is being able to take a long-term view and see through cycles, but in the interest of driving the best risk-adjusted return for our member base.
For Ian, adapting while staying long-term focused is about dynamic asset allocation and policy awareness. But when Oleg joined the Tokyo Forum I mentioned earlier, he found many investors weren't yet at that stage. For them, TPA was still something to understand, a philosophy, if you will, to explore rather than a structure to implement.
It's something that's a relatively new concept to a lot of the institutional investors there. And in fact, we ran a poll before we did the panel discussion on TPA. And the most popular answer in that poll, I believe, was that we need to learn more about it before we decide whether this is something that we want to implement. And when we had the preparation call with the panelists, and the panelists, by the way, came from Malaysia, from Australia, and from Japan, we decided to sort of agree on, okay, how are we actually going to describe TPA to the audience? And we framed it really as a way of thinking, not a particular system, but a philosophy in terms of how you manage the portfolio. So implementation may be different across different organizations, but what you all agree on is that every investment must earn its place in the portfolio. And that basically means assessing any new investment opportunities and all of the things that are currently in the portfolio based on their contributions to the total risk and return objectives of the portfolio, not just whether they outperform the benchmark in their asset class or whether they meet the objectives, if you like, of portfolio construction within that asset class. So really, it's important to understand that it's a spectrum where TPA exists on. It's not something that's kind of an on and off switch, but it's a continual approach spanning from very traditional strategic asset allocation type thinking, where you allocate capital to asset classes with relatively tight bands, to an approach that moves away from that to a greater or lesser extent, and starts thinking about every investment, whether it's a public equity investment or a private equity investment, on the same footing and in terms of its contribution to the overall portfolios.
Oleg also brought up another barrier, corporate culture. He pointed out that silos simply are hard to break and described how language barriers, incentives, and even team structures make culture one of the hardest shifts to achieve.
I think it's something that can change, but it changes gradually, and it needs a combination of organizational incentives as well as an evolution in the thinking. So I think in finance, quite often we have a number of language gaps that we face, even within an asset class. For example, the way that fundamental analysts think about, or fundamental portfolio managers think about equity investing, or talk about equity investing, can be quite different from the way that quants talk about equity investing. And sometimes you find that if you sort of parse that language, they're thinking and talking about the same things, but they're just talking about them in different terms. Similarly, the way that private asset teams describe their investment philosophy and the investments that they're making can be quite different from the way that teams that operate in public markets describe their investments, manage those investments, sort of monitor them, and so on. So what I'm trying to say is, I guess, silos are hard to break. Sometimes people want to protect their mandates because that is how they're measured. And firms can start making progress, or often start making progress, by changing the kind of the language that is used and the incentives that are used. So if you redefine success in terms of total portfolio outcomes, if you build that cross-asset class expertise, for example, by rotating staff across different asset class teams, or if you can create shared dashboards, for example, so that everyone is working from the same data, that all helps in terms of the cultural transition towards more total portfolio thinking within an organization.
Ian built on this idea. He went further, in fact, telling us that the biggest challenge to implementing TPA isn't the math or the models. It's actually changing the culture itself.
It requires a level of selflessness and a level of humility that not all investment professionals necessarily demonstrate. I don't mean that in a judgmental way. I just think there are some contexts in which certain people will flourish and certain other people will not flourish as well. And why is selflessness / humility important is that, in essence, one is opening oneself up to surrendering to a better idea for the portfolio. It's not about I've been allocated X percent of the portfolio to invest in private equity and I'm a really classy private equity investor with really strong relationships, and I'm going to ensure that my pace of commitments is such that I maintain my percentage allocation come hell or high water. And if I outperform other parts of the portfolio, I'm going to argue for why my allocation to private equity should not be adjusted in a dollar value sense. One has to be open to the possibility that the future environment could change and could point to sacrificing a level of future commitments to an alternative investment idea that's been agreed by the collective stewards of the total portfolio that, relevant to the goal, that is a better investment idea. And that's the selflessness and humility that I talk about. The humility also comes into place in terms of being able to participate in a discussion where constructive challenge around the most appropriate outcome at a total portfolio level is contemplated. And then there's the additional, let's call it acceptance of accountability is probably the right word. Having made that decision, everybody is collectively accountable for the collective outcome.
I next wanted to steer the conversation toward climate. So I asked Oleg if he could describe how investors are integrating climate considerations into a TPA framework.
This is something that's still actually a point of discussion among various investors that adopt TPA principles. And we've had that discussion come up in Tokyo. And really, a progressive way of viewing this in a TPA framework is that climate is really a portfolio-level exposure. So it is not something that is just tracked in a specific thematic sleeve, for example, or a sustainability mandate. And that really means asking at the portfolio level the question, okay, what is our, for example, what is our total carbon risk? And we have examples where those are managed quite holistically in portfolios. For example, you know, we can think of a large asset owner in New Zealand, for instance, that pays a lot of attention to climate risk management. And the way that they do it is they set portfolio level climate targets. And then they also adopt parts of their reference portfolio to align with those targets. So they are able to integrate climate across asset classes, you know, in terms of screening, in terms of tilts, in terms of manager mandates and active ownership, while using the reference portfolio constructed also in a climate-aware way as an anchor for both risk and for cost.
I think the challenge for all of us, and I'd hesitate to when I say it, but I think it's true. The future challenge around the energy transition, nature-based investing, et cetera, talks to total portfolio approach more generally, but also talks to the strong evolution of those capabilities. And so I think asset owners more generally probably are facing into this problem, some more evolved than others.
And of course, you can't have any conversation today, regardless of the subject, without talking about AI.
I think maybe it's difficult to predict exactly how AI will transform the thinking around the total portfolio approach. But what we can already see is maybe one place where AI can obviously kind of be advantageous is in bridging some of those language gaps that we face in finance. Shared dashboards that let teams speak a common language, modeling and tooling, and AI can accelerate all of those aspects. And really, it's just also interacting with unstructured data, which can be very important if you're trying to, for instance, put private asset classes where data is provided in different format on the same footing as public asset classes in terms of your decision-making process.
So where does this story go next? Ian?
What I would like to see is us move further along the spectrum and achieve a level of integrated thinking and constructive engagement around the total portfolio and what allocations on a medium to longer term view are the best for the portfolio in a way that is probably never quite attainable because you never get 100% selflessness or humility that I referenced earlier, but is certainly further along that practice than we have today. Now, that's not a judgment on my team. What it is a recognition that you can have the intent, but you also need a series of processes that support that intent. And where we're still evolving today is the quality of our data and the capacity to use that data to inform our insights around aggregate risk management, the opportunity to cross-populate or cross-pollinate insights between specialist teams. What I call the velocity of information, having that cross-pollination of insight is critically important, but it relies on goodwill and an antiquated framework of information sharing. Clearly, AI should improve that. Those are some of the things that we're working really hard on.
And to close, I turn to Oleg, who shared what success with TPA could look like across the APAC region in the years ahead.
The first progress could be, you know, we talked a bit about culture and incentives. So if those are aligned to total fund results with cross-asset teams speaking one language and risk models and analytics enabling them to speak that language, that would be one kind of measurable progress. Then that leads us to, essentially what enables that language. Perhaps it's analytics, perhaps it's dashboards that track efficiency, resilience, sustainability, and implementation quality. And these are kind of used in real decision-making process. And then I guess the governance shift is another thing that is important. So in the total portfolio approach, usually what this means is that there is more delegation given to investment teams without placing them within kind of very strict asset class level guardrails. So the board will focus more on outcome and risk appetite for the portfolio. And then the investment team will really focus on how to implement those objectives into a portfolio that kind of best meets the current environment and the current needs of the organization.
That's all for this episode. My thanks to Ian and Oleg for sharing their thoughts and their expertise on how the total portfolio approach is moving from theory to practice. From Ian's inside view at Australian Retirement Trust to Oleg's regional perspective across Asia Pacific. Together, they showed us that TPA is as much about culture as it is about capital, and that while adoption looks different across and even within regions, the direction of travel seems clear. Next up on the program, we'll turn to the world of wealth management, exploring the trends, tools, and client demands that are reshaping how wealth managers serve the next generation of investors. Until then, I'm your host, Adam Bass, and this is MSCI Perspectives. Thanks for listening.